Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hello, this is Pete. I am one of the content producers here at Ethical Property Partners. As well as a podcast, we have our YouTube channel, and one thing that's been working brilliantly over there are our Sophisticated Saturdays. Now, this episode includes audio from a Sophisticated Saturday show where you'll hear about a deal that Frank has recently done. In the first part, you'll get all the numbers, so if you want to take part and work out how you'd do the deal, you can grab a calculator and make some notes before listening to the second part, where Frank will tell you exactly how he structured the deal in a sophisticated way. The third and final part is exclusive to you as a podcast listener, where Frank gets grilled by an expert investor and chats about the deal in more detail. So over to Frank.
Hey guys, welcome to another Sophisticated Saturday YouTube episode. So the challenge here that you need to find the solution to is I had a help visit, a virtual help visit with a couple just a few days ago, 3 days ago, so this is hot off the press. It's a real live deal that I've had to come up with a solution to. With my business partner, the two of us have decided to offer on this portfolio together. The vendors have said that they are interested. They're mulling it over the weekend, and we're gonna get a decision on Monday. So I'll let you know how we get on this one. But here is the situation. They have got a rather large portfolio, 30 odd properties with one lender. Now, I've talked about this before, but I'll reiterate now, that is poor portfolio planning. Really, really poor. Because if that lender changes their criteria, if that lender goes under, if it gets bought by someone else, if it becomes a unfavorable lender, you're stuck. You're stuck with them. Much better to be with a plethora of lenders so that you've got some stability. But nevertheless, they did this. They bought these properties over 25 years ago, but they bought them largely in the Northeast and have seen very, very little capital growth. A bit, but they've refinanced, and they've refinanced at 85% loan to value, and they're basically now at 100% loan to value. So they've got no equity. We're talking £50,000 houses, £60,000 houses, so cheap houses basically, and hard ones to rely on capital growth. But very good cash flow, very, very good cash flow from them. They have got savings, they've got a pension pot, and they've been selling off these properties and using their own savings to top up the negative equity that some of them are selling at in order to get rid of them. So they've got rid of 20 in that manner. So open market sales, few auction sales, but they've got 10 more. They've only got a few months. I think they've got 4 months before their current mortgages expire. And they have come to us, my business partner and I, and said, please, can you help us with these last 10 properties? We'd like to just be done with them. They're in their 70s, this couple. They didn't want to be landlords in their retirement. Their portfolio was supposed to help them to retire. And in a way it has. It's given them a fantastic cash flow, absolutely awesome cash flow over the 25 years, because they're in the Northeast. These properties are making a lot of money every month. They're making about £300 a month each property, and they've got 30 of them, so you can't say it's all bad. But they're recognizing that they're in a bit of a pickle in terms of repaying these mortgages, that they can't in just a few months' time. So that is the quandary. What would you do? How would you help them? There's around £250-300 a month net positive cash flow every month on each of the 10 properties. They're worth around £50,000-60,000 each. There's 10 of them. The couple are in their early 70s. What would your offer be? What would you do to find a win-win solution? If you would ask other questions, feel free to shout them now. They've got 4 months left on their mortgages. I think that's all you need to know. What solution would you come up with? Grab a pen, grab a piece of paper, and actually write down how you would offer and what you would offer to this couple, because until you actually make a decision and put your flag in the ground and say, this is what my offer would be, it's too easy to be passive. It's too easy to just sit there going, oh, that's a clever deal. Oh, I like that deal. But this is how you learn, guys. So grab a pen and paper. I'll tell you the solution that I came up with right after the break.
This is the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. To see more about our Sophisticated Saturdays, just search YouTube for Ethical Property Partners.
Hey guys, welcome back. So, this is the offer that I made, not necessarily the best offer, but this is the offer that I made to the couple. I offered them to go 50-50 on the cash flow, for us to exchange contracts now. So we're going to exchange on all 10 at today's prices. So we know that today's prices, the 50, 60,000 pound will cover the mortgages. The mortgages are the same amount. So we're going to have the completion amount or the purchase price at the value of the mortgage. We're going to take control of the properties now and take responsibility for the properties. And we're going to go 50-50 with the vendors on the cash flow. So what that means is they're going to get an income moving forwards of 150 or so pounds, 125, 150 pounds every single month, which is pretty good per property. Bearing in mind there's 10 of these, and we're going to get the same, so pretty good for us. And we're fixing this for 10 years time. So they're going to have a definite completion date in 10 years time, so they can rely on that. We are not going to pay a deposit, so we're just going to take control and start taking the cash flow. And we are exchanging contracts. Now, the reason we're exchanging contracts is because we're then going to go to the lender and say to the lender, you need, now this isn't guaranteed, you need to extend these mortgages to enable this couple to repay you. Because the alternative is the lender repossesses them and probably takes a 25% hit on these properties. Well, 25% over 10 properties is a lot, because we've offered to buy them from them at 75%. That's probably what they'll sell for at auction. That's a lot of money. In fact, we've worked it out. We think it's in the region of £250,000 that the lender would have to write off. So what we're going to say to them is, look, we have this agreement. It's in exchange with delay completion. The buyers are Frank Flagg from Ethical Property Partners. We are guaranteeing to pay the mortgage for the 10 years. We're guaranteeing to buy the properties from you at the redemption figures. Are you happy with that? And we think that the lender will go for that. If the lender doesn't go for that, we have put in place a clause that will release the couple from their exchange of contracts. So we're going to have a background agreement that says that if they can't continue the lending, then they will be released in the exchange of contracts. So there's no commitment until the lender says yes. And secondly, we've also said that we'll buy them at 75% if they are able to negotiate that with the lender. So if the lender says, no, you have to buy now, you have to sell now rather, but we're happy for you to sell at a discount, because we've negotiated that before with lenders where we've said, look, we've got a buyer, but it's below the redemption figure. Are you happy to swallow a discount? Then we've got first refusal, if you like, at 75% of today's values. So we've kind of got a few bites of the cherry. Hopefully that's given you a little insight into a real transaction that we have right now. I will let you know if they say yes. I think they will, because I think it's a really good win-win solution. Liz Strama, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Ethical Property Partners podcast, where you get to ask the questions that you think that the regular listeners to our podcast have about a deal that I've described in a previous episode. So you have listened to the episode, you've dissected it, and in this episode, you're going to put me on the hot spot. And hot spot, is that an expression? Not sure, but you know what I mean.
Only if you're watching Strike It Lucky in the 90s.
There we go. So you're put in the hot seat. That's what I meant to say. I knew something was wrong with that expression. You're going to put me in the hot seat and quiz me on why I've said certain things, why I've done certain things, etc. So Liz, I shall hand over to you.
So at the start, you mentioned that this particular vendor had bought 30 properties using just one lender over 25 years ago. So I just wanted you to explain in a bit more detail why you found this so risky. And if any listeners are in the same boat, what can they do to rectify the issue?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Liz. Why is it risky and what can you do? Well, it's risky because, and actually what can you do is a two-pronged approach, isn't it? One, don't get in that situation. And two, if you're in that situation, how do you get out of it? So there's kind of three questions there. So the first one is, why is it risky? Well, you're putting all of your eggs in one basket, and that's not a good idea in any business. But if you look at property specifically, I always cringe when people say, oh, I'm smashing it. I've got 50 serviced accommodation units. And I think, but what if the regulations change for serviced accommodation, which is highly likely and is in the post, you know, it's coming for sure. Or what if the demand for serviced accommodation changes? Now, you can think to yourself, well, I'll be okay. And the pandemic, for example, massively increased demand for serviced accommodation. But I don't want to be at the behest of some other external factor. I want to be in control of my business. I want to know that my business is going to be profitable this year, profitable next year, profitable the year after. And yes, if you have a serviced accommodation portfolio now, as we do, you're laughing all the way to the bank for the next few years because of the staycation boom, etc. However, if you were sat there 24 months ago with a HMO portfolio next to your mate who had a 100% service accommodation portfolio, you were both probably thinking you had highly specialized, highly profitable businesses. Yet the HMO person with their portfolio is now not laughing all the way to the bank. In fact, I know some of the guys who have built themselves HMO portfolios who are really struggling, especially if they were white collar HMOs, because a lot of white collar workers were choosing to live in shared accommodation because it was economical. They were standing on their own two feet. It was quite social, quite enjoyable, etc. But health has trumped all of that. So now they've either moved back to mum and dad's and they've got a job locally, or mum and dad have helped them out to go rent their own place so that they can, you know, they only need a bit of financial support for a couple of years until their salary rises, and then they can afford to rent their own place anyway or buy their own place. And so the demand for HMO, who wants to share a bathroom and a kitchen with five strangers when there's a pandemic raging? And so it's vulnerable. You are vulnerable to change if you are overexposed in any area. So let's come back to mortgage lending. Yes, you should buy different types of properties. You wouldn't want all leasehold. You wouldn't want all of your properties in one street, for example, because what happens if a bad family moves in, or what happens if a big factory is built at the end of the street and starts pumping out smoke, or, you know, even a building development at the end of a road. For the next 18 months, you might have big lorries trundling up and down the road, bringing all the materials. I had a house where a tenant moved out because a bypass was put in at the end of the street. Now, I actually bought the house because the bypass was being put in because I got such an amazing deal on it. But that tenant moved out, and then I had to let the property cheaper whilst the bypass was built because there was just building works all day every day. He had a nice car, and he said, I clean my car on a Sunday afternoon, and by Monday afternoon it's covered in like dust from all the building works. I had one property and the rent was $450 a month, $475 a month, and he moved out and I let it for $425 a month for a year until the works were done, and then I could let it again at the normal price. That didn't hurt me massively, you know, £50 a month or whatever discount. But if I'd had 20 properties on that street and all the tenants had moved out, that could have sunk me potentially, you know, if my whole portfolio was all around that one property. And so being overextended in any area is a massive mistake, in my opinion. Yes, you can make it big for sure. Yes, it's really efficient and really, you can get really profitable and really systemized, and you can become a master much quicker in one area. But I think that's massively offset by the risks being multiplied. And so when you're looking at lenders, you always want to go with a variety of lenders because their approaches to lending will change all the time. Now, it's harder because if you build a relationship with one lender, they're going to get comfortable with you. They're going to lend to you more. But so many investors came unstuck in 2009, 2010, where a lender called the Mortgage Works, they're still quite active now, started clamping down on their lending. And I won't go into the gory details, but in a nutshell, they had a small clause in their terms and conditions that said, if they deemed your portfolio to have dropped in value and you sold one property in the portfolio, they could take 100% of the proceeds, even if there was equity in that property, and offset that equity against other loans to bring your loan to value down. And so what it meant was people who were trying to liquidate properties to deal with increasing interest rates, and they were going up quite rapidly at one stage in 2009-2010, couldn't liquidate any money because the mortgage works were just taking all of the proceeds from every sale and putting it against other properties. And so people went under because of that one little clause. Now, if you had 20 properties, or in this case, 30 properties, and you had those spread equally across five or six different lenders, that wouldn't be a problem. You just wouldn't sell the five or six with that lender. You'd sell a couple with a different lender. If one lender stops lending or puts their interest rates up really high, then you sell a couple of properties there, or you refinance off those properties. And not every lender is going to put their interest rates up at the same time. Not every lender is going to have these clauses in their T's and C's. And so some lenders at some point want to lend money because they've got a big chunk of money and they want to start getting it working for them. And at other times, lenders are really tight and they're under pressure from their shareholders or from the regulatory bodies to get money in. Sometimes lenders have a change of heart towards portfolio landlords, or sometimes they'll like portfolio landlords, or sometimes they won't like people who get all of their income from property. And so they'll start favoring other types of borrowers. And so you can't possibly predict which lender is going to be great in 5 or 10 years time and which lender is going to go under. You know, you can be with a great lender and then they get taken over by another bank and become rubbish. So the only way of protecting yourself against interest rate rises, against loans. Now, most mortgages have a clause in them that says if your property value drops, they can force you to repay the difference. So let's say you buy a £100,000 house and you've got a 75% mortgage, you've got 25% equity in that property. If that property drops by 10 grand, so it's now worth 90, they can come knocking and say, well, we want £7,500 from you because that £10,000 has come off the value. So now you need to pay 10% of the loan down. And if you don't have that £7,500, then strictly speaking, you're in default. To the best of my knowledge, no mainstream lender has ever enforced that rule in their T's and C's. But if we had a massive correction in the market, and the market is definitely overvalued at the moment, in my humble opinion, so we are due a correction, and it shouldn't be a surprise when it comes along. People always seem surprised when property prices drop, but it's not a linear relationship. Over time it goes up, but in any shorter period we can expect to see corrections. If we see a drop of 5%, 10%, 15% in property prices, that wouldn't be crazy. We shouldn't be that surprised if that happens. But you might have the one lender, or you might have borrowed money from the one lender that decides for the first time to implement that clause in their contracts. Now, if you've got 5 out of 30 mortgages with that lender, that's not going to be the end of the world. You can sell a few properties, use the equity that you've liquidated to pay down those mortgages. You're still good. It's a bit painful, it's inconvenient, but you know, hey ho, not the end of the world. If you've got 30 out of 30 properties with that lender, where are you finding all that money from? You could be repossessed even though on your entire portfolio, even though you're cash flow positive and servicing all your mortgages. Now, will that happen? No, not definitely. Could it happen? Yes, it definitely could happen, which is why you want to be with multiple lenders on different terms. So you want 25-year mortgages, 20-year mortgages, you want 2-year fix, 1-year fix, 5-year variables, 5-year fix. You want to be with as many lenders on as many different products as possible so that any change that comes in, you're insulated against it. So if you've got 30 properties and 3 of them, the monthly payments double, that's probably okay. 3 out of 30, you're going to be fine with that. Your portfolio is still going to be profitable. If 30 out of 30, the monthly payments double, you've probably got very little time before your portfolio implodes, unless you've got massive cash reserves, etc. So that's what I meant, Liz, by it being risky. Does that make sense? Have you got any follow-up questions to that before I talk about what we need to do about it?
Yeah, I was just going to remind you, the second part is how to rectify the issue if somebody's currently in that same position.
Yeah, the best thing to do is not to get into that situation. So as you're building your portfolio up, make sure that you've got them on different loan to values, make sure you've got them, even have one or two unencumbered so that if you need to, you can sell that quick and take all that money out. It's much better to have a portfolio at 75% loan to value with a couple of properties unencumbered with no mortgages on them than to have everything at 70%, because the two that are unencumbered are more liquid. Also, you want to have them on different products and you want to have them at different loan to value. So that's the best way of building it. Now, if you're in the situation like these guys were, where they've got 30 properties with one lender, the best thing you can do is start improving the situation. So as your properties come up for refinance, refinance them onto different lenders, refinance them onto lower loan to values if you're able to. Even if they're not due for refinance, some of them will have zero penalties. So start refinancing them off anyway. And don't be afraid to sell some. So at the moment, it's a brilliant time to sell properties. Even though you want to build a portfolio, it's absolutely fine to sell off 10 or 20% of your portfolio now. Put that cash into paying off a few mortgages, have a couple of unencumbered properties, and then you're ready to jump back into the market. So you're going to get really good cash flow because you're not paying mortgages on those two, three, four properties. And then when the market starts to take a hit, you can jump back into the market because you can easily just get lending at 50%, 60%, 70% on those unencumbered properties. And you've got your war chest back ready to go hunting with. So I think those are the two routes that you, and of course, anything else you buy, you don't go with the same lender, you go with a new lender. So that's how I would be approaching it if I was in that situation now, Liz.
Yeah, makes total sense. So this particular vendor bought properties in the Northeast. He refinanced it at 85% loan to value. But you mentioned that because of the market and how it is now, the properties are currently sitting at 100% loan to value. So if investors are in a position where they can see the loan to value being squeezed, what can they do to avoid losing that equity?
Something we're all afraid of, isn't it? Property prices going down. The best thing to do is not to refinance at 85%. In fact, I don't even buy properties at 85%. The opportunity, or the risk rather, of you going into negative equity at an 85% loan to value is just massive. Plus you pay through the nose for your interest rate, so your cash flow is going to be worse. I think if you're doing decent deals, you don't need 85% lending. You can do 75% lending and still make them no money down deals after refinance. So I think that is a mistake, because what are you doing with that money? If you're spending it, so if you're, you know, if you're refinancing it, you buy a 200 grand property for 150, right? In fact, I recorded a YouTube episode today, actually, where a property was purchased for 106. And it was one of yours, actually, Liz. It was your deal. I did it on the YouTube channel this morning. You bought it, you paid 106 for it, but it was worth 150. And so after refinance, you're going to get all of your money out at 75%. So you don't need to get an 85% loan to value mortgage. But if you do go for an 85% loan to value mortgage, then what are you doing with that money? You're either spending it, buying a nice car or whatever. Well, now you're borrowing money in order to improve your lifestyle. You know, go on holiday, buy a car. That's bad news. Robert Kiyosaki would like shoot you in the head for that, because you're borrowing money to buy a doodad. Bad news. You want your profits to pay for your doodads, in his words, you know, your luxuries. Or, and you might go, well, no, I wouldn't dream of doing that. I would take the 10% extra lending and go buy more properties. Well, now you're just building your portfolio even higher on an unstable footing. Now you've got more properties at 85%. So I wouldn't go in at 85%. That's the first thing. The second thing is you need to be aware of where in the country you're buying and what the likely capital growth is in that area. And you should never buy for capital growth. Capital growth is a bonus. I started building my portfolio in 2009, 2010 in the East Midlands. My portfolio did not move a jot until 2015. So I had like the worst 5 to 6 years of investing that I could have chosen in about 100 years. Like I looked back and I thought, I can't find a period where I wouldn't have made any capital growth in 5 or 6 years. But what it made me do was focus on cash flow. It's a massively important lesson to learn. You invest for cash flow. Capital growth just happens when it happens. And if you go into a situation of negative equity, so if properties drop in price, that's fine because you weren't relying on that capital growth. You were still investing for cash flow. You just don't sell when the properties have dropped in value. That's the golden rule. Never be a forced seller.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what I did with my deal. You just make sure the numbers stack. And then it's about looking at it from a sensible point of view and not taking too much of a risk.
Exactly.
So your solution for this deal is to exchange on all 10 properties now, take 50-50 cash flow with the vendor and complete in 10 years. As you can imagine, I've got a few questions around that. So the first one is, how likely is the mortgage lender to agree to extend the mortgage? Second question is, what happens if the value of the properties doesn't increase over the next 10 years? And the last question is, you mentioned the vendors were already in their 70s. What happens if they don't survive until completion?
You love your multi-part questions, don't you, Liz? You realise how taxing this is on me, having to remember the different elements. You might have to remind me. But so the first part was, what happens if the mortgage lender doesn't agree? So I forget how long these guys have got on their mortgages, but not long. I think they've got like 5 months or 12 months or something.
Yeah, I think it was about 4 months.
Was it? Yeah. So the lender might not agree. That's a possibility. If the lender doesn't agree, what can they do? Well, they can start repossession proceedings, but that's going to take a little time. You know, that's going to take a year at least, maybe longer. And in that time, we're going to keep servicing the mortgage. So we've got at least 12 months, probably 24 months on this before the lender really gets upset. But even though on the first time of asking, they might say, no, you need to repay. When we explain to them, we can't repay, but actually we've exchanged contracts and we've got a binding agreement. This is the buyer. It's Frank Flegg. He's got this portfolio behind him. This is his cash situation. He's a solid bet, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think it's highly likely that begrudgingly the lender will agree to not repossess, but we can't guarantee it. And what I said to the vendors, because they asked me the same question, I said, look, at the moment, you're going to say, pretty please, can I have an extension? And they're going to say yes or no. If they say no, you're going to be in a situation where you're forced to sell straight away. And you don't want to sell straight away because you're probably going to take a hit. You're going to end up in a negative. You're going to end up owing the bank more than the property sell for. You're going to have to dip into your savings. They're in the fortunate situation where they can dip into their savings, but they don't want to. And what I said to them is these properties, these 10 properties are making you money every month. And so the longer you can string it out for, the more money you make. If you have to sell them all in 2 years' time and dip into your savings, you'll have more savings at that time. So every month we can string this out for, it's to your advantage. Secondly, we've got a chance that they'll say yes to the whole 10 years, in which case, brilliant, because you get the price that you want for them. You get the cash flow for the 10 years, etc. The mortgage company are not going to have come across this before. And so by us exchanging contracts and demonstrating to them a done deal, they're much more likely to not want to go down the costly route. They'd need barristers to work out how they can undo an exchange of contracts. In fact, I've been in court with a vendor helping to stop his repossession, where I exchange contracts in order to frustrate the repossession process. And the judge didn't know. So the prosecuting solicitor, whether it is a prosecuting solicitor, but basically the solicitor for the lender said to the judge, does that mean we can't repossess now that Mr. Flegg has exchanged contracts to buy the property? And the judge said, I don't know. He said, it's a very interesting question. I don't know. And so if a judge doesn't know, you can imagine how costly it would be for the lender to try and get a judgment against the vendor. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it's a strong disincentive for them going down that route, because they wouldn't be able to reclaim those costs, those legal costs. I don't think maybe they would, but it's a risk. So what is the chance? I don't know. I'd be very hard to put a percentage on it, but I do know that ownership is 9/10 of the law and the vendor owns the properties and he's going to enter into a sale agreement with myself. We're going to service the mortgage for the whole period. So I think we're on pretty strong ground. The bigger risk is, and this is where most investors would go wrong, they try and negotiate with the lender now before doing the deal. And that's a big no-no because it's going to be hard. We're going to have to slog it out. It's going to take months. I don't want to be doing all that for free. We're going to sign the agreement now. I'm going to start getting half the cash flow now. And then I'm going to help the vendor to argue with the lender because now I'm getting paid for my deal and they know that they've got me by their side, et cetera, fighting their corner. So really important that you do the deal first before you go and spend a load of time on it. Now you're going to say, Frank, what about the other two questions? And I've forgotten them, Liz. You'll have to remind
me. So the second question is, what happens if the value of the properties doesn't increase over the next 10 years?
Yeah, so I often get asked by vendors, why can't you pay me more? You know, that you're buying, sometimes we buy at 75% of today's value in 5 years time or in 10 years time. And that seems like a really low price. But in this instance, we were offering 100% in a 10 year period. So we are hoping for a 33% rise in values. You need 33% in order to be able to refinance no money down. Is it guaranteed that we'll see a 33% rise in this portfolio over the next 10 years? No, it's not guaranteed at all. So but it's expected. I would expect it to get to that point. So you then have to look at, okay, so if values don't rise at all or only by 10% or whatever, you stress test it, you stress test the deal. So you say, right, what would I do in that situation? Now, I'm always wanting for each deal to look after itself. I don't want to say, well, I could go and put 100 grand of my own money in and still buy all the properties, etc. I don't want to be in that forced situation. So you have an option. You can, at that point, it's all of the agreements are transferable. So I could actually buy five of them and sell five on the open market and the proceeds. So let's say the market, it's only gone up by, let's say we need 33% increase rather than 33, it keeps it simpler. So rather than say, oh, they've only gone up by 15%, I can't buy any of them, I could actually sell half and put that 15% in my pocket and then use it with the other five, and that adds up to 30%. So now I'm going to be able to refinance out and do a no money down deal. I could put my own hand in my own pocket, but I don't want to, because if I'm doing loads of these deals, I'm not going to want to put my hand in my pocket for loads of deals, or I may not be able to. But the biggie for me is the cash flow. So if I'm concerned about capital growth, and on these ones I would be, I would just put the cash flow in a bank account, not touch it for the whole 10 years. Now, it doesn't mean I don't use it. It means I don't spend it. So I would definitely invest it. I'm not going to leave it there and let it earn 0.1% interest. I'll be doing deals with it. I will be earning great interest on it. Might lend it out at, you know, 1% a month or something. But that money would be earmarked. It'd keep coming back into the account every time it's not being used, and it would grow so that at the end of the deal, even if property prices haven't gone up at all, the cash flow, so the tenants in those properties have paid for me to buy the properties. And you need to stress test it. And it comes with experience. I can work out on the fly now, you know, because it's still finger in the air. You know, what do we think will happen with rents? Well, if you're charging 400 quid a month rent now or a grand a month rent now, it's not going to be 400 quid in 10 years time. It's probably going to be 550 in 10 years time. So great, you've got more cash flow, more profit. And also, you know what your profitability is at the moment. I seem to remember cash flow on those was about 200 quid a property. 50% is going to go to the vendors, 50% to me. So 10 properties, 100 quid a month. It's a grand a month. 120 months, that's £120,000. That's plenty of money for me to complete on all the properties. Plus, it's not 120 grand because that 120 grand would have worked hard during that 10 years. And it won't be a grand a month profit in 10 years' time. It will probably be 1200 quid or 1500 quid a month profit. So that's how you protect against lack of capital growth.
And I think it's a point a lot of people miss. I do think when people think about these things, they don't realise they can use the cash flow during the lifetime of what they're doing to help with the capital growth in the long term. And it's definitely a really clever way of doing it.
Absolutely, especially if you know that if you save 12 grand this year in cash flow, if you invest that sensibly, you should definitely be able to add 50% to that, maybe even 100% to that. So now, by the end of year two, let's just say you've added 50%, so you've got another 6 grand. So you've got the original 12 that's grown to 18, and then you've got another 12. So now you're 18 plus 12, so now you've got 30. And then you invest that 30 and you make another, call it 50%, 15 grand. So you've got 45 grand plus you got another 12. So now you got your 57 grand and it just compounds and compounds. I think it was Einstein that said that compound growth is the seventh wonder of the world. And it absolutely is. There's a Chinese fable, and it was about a lowly merchant or someone in the Chinese court. And he goes to the king or the emperor, I would have thought it would be in China. And he offers to do something for the emperor, like a really important task. And the emperor says, that would be amazing. Thank you for doing that for me. You know, no one else in the kingdom can do it. What do you want in repayment? And he says, I want repayment in rice. And the emperor says, yes, of course you want repayment in rice, because that's, you know, was the currency in China at the time. And he said, but how much rice? And the guy says, I'll tell you what, let's call it one grain of rice on the first square of a chessboard. And each square on the chessboard, you just double the number of grains of rice. So the first square, you put one grain of rice. And on the second square, give me 2 grains of rice. And on the third square, give me 4 grains of rice. And just cover the chessboard in that manner. And the emperor like laughs and he thinks he's got himself an amazing deal. But there are 64 squares on a chessboard. And that compound growth of one grain of rice. Of course, like by square 5, you're on 16 grains of rice. By square 64, it's like more than all the... It'd be funny if it was all the tea in China, wouldn't it? But more than like all the rice in China, it's like an amazing amount of rice. It's and that's the power of that compounding. Of using that cash flow and growing it.
So the last question in my trilogy was...
You moved on very quickly from my Chinese fable. Liz and I have a joke about how I take our podcast off topic. So apologies, Liz, I know. The editor's going to tell you off. Pete's going to tell you off for overrunning. And I'll say it's all Liz. She keeps asking all these questions.
So the third question is, you mentioned the vendors were already in their 70s. What happens if they don't survive until completion?
Yeah, it's a risk. If it was an unencumbered property, it wouldn't matter, because we write in both ways, actually. So if I pass away, what will happen? And if they pass away, what will happen? It's, you know, a basic thing to put into any JV agreement, because in effect, this is a JV agreement. Yes, it's a purchase agreement, but we're joint venturing and we're basically business partners for the next 10 years. So you need to write these things in for any eventuality. So if I die, the agreement is inherited by my heirs and they can continue to run the agreement. If the vendors die, then their estate inherits the agreement and it carries on. And I've had one recently where that happened. And if the property is unencumbered, then it just carries on. It's really simple. But if the property is not unencumbered, so if there's a mortgage on it, the fly in the ointment is the mortgage company won't let it run indefinitely. They typically will give you a year. So now it boils down to, I can do this deal, and if they pass away in 6 months' time, I've had 50% of the monthly cash flow. Remember, this is a no money down deal, so it's money for nothing. So I'm earning £1,000 a month or so for 6 months. But then they pass away and I earn another £1,000 a month for the 12 months that the lender allows us, and then they force us to sell the properties. Well, we might have had some capital growth in that time, so I might get a bit of cash when we sell them, or I might not get any cash, but I haven't got any liability either. So I've just only made 18 grand, but that's like my worst case scenario is only 18 grand. Best case scenario is it goes for the whole 10 years and I buy the portfolio and it's all hunky-dory. So you have to, a mentor of mine used to say, heads we win. So it goes for 10 years, capital values go up by 50% or 100% is possible in 10 years. And we make great money every month and we make great money or we buy it, no money left in, and have 10 properties in our portfolio and we're over the moon. That's heads, we win. Tails, we don't lose. Something unforeseen happens. The lender says no, or they pass away. And we haven't lost because we've only made, only in inverted commas, a grand a month for as long as the deal has run. That's how we structure our deals. So it really doesn't matter. There's nothing that can happen that can end in us losing money, I guess. That's what we're looking for on all of our deals. And if all of your deals are structured like that, maybe something crops up, you know, heaven forbid, but a slate falls off a roof and it hits someone on the pavement below and it turns out that your insurance is invalid because of XYZ clause that you weren't aware of, and all of a sudden you've got a claim or something like that. It's always possible, but you mitigate against as much of this as possible so that in the unlikely event that something like that happens, everything else is possible to contribute to that one that's gone a bit Pete Tong. You won't know Pete Tong, Liz. You're a Derbyshire girl, aren't you? That's Cockney rhyming slang for going wrong, just so you know.
I do know Pete.
I tell you who doesn't know. Like any Americans listening, they'll go, Pete Tong? What's that mean?
Yeah, absolutely right. I think planning is key to anything. And I think everything you've said so far in this Q&A session is all comes back to one thing, and that's planning at the very beginning. If you get that right, then you can't lose.
And being cautious, yeah. Planning for a conservative portfolio that's safely going to make you money. Absolutely. Thanks, Liz. They were some awesome questions. Really enjoyed answering them. I think you probably hit the nail on the head in terms of what people would be asking. Guys, if you have questions for any of these episodes that you'd like Liz to quiz me on, then don't hesitate to head over to the podcast page, pop a comment in there, and we will happily answer them. Or you can head over to the YouTube channel and chat with us on there and tell us what you'd like us to do episodes about, what you'd like us to cover. I did one yesterday from a gentleman that asked me to do one on a specific topic. So yeah, we're here to serve you guys, and until our next episode, happy investing.
That was the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast from Ethical Property Partners. Use your podcast app to follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode.